Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and Happy New Year from Spin the Rally Pod. It's 2022 and we're back for a brand new season of Rally Action. All set to be an exciting year ahead. We hope you're going to come along for the ride. I'm Rally fan Lisa O'Sullivan. I'm joined by the man they call the voice of Rally, Colin Clark, former team boss George Donaldson, and Dirtfish.com senior staff writer David Evans. And I think we just have to say Happy New Year, chaps. Have you had a good festive season?
Fabulous, thanks, Lisa. Fabulous.
Underwhelming.
I binge-watched, was it a programme called Veep, which was very funny.
Okay.
Seven series of it. There's not that many episodes in each series, but my wife and I watched it over the sort of 2 to 3 weeks of the holiday and a little bit afterwards to watch all the episodes through. Absolutely phenomenal. I can't believe it.
Is that kind of like an American The Thick of It?
Yes, I think I've never seen The Thick of It, but I'm told that's what it's like. Yeah. It was absolutely outrageous.
Mm. I've been binge watching Narcos Mexico has been my one. I've watched that the last...
That's a tough watch.
Good. Really enjoying that one, I have to say. No, yeah, it is a little bit, because you've got to read, and I hate reading. You're half of it's English, half of it's in Mexican, or Spanish. So you've got to read the blooming subtitles, which you know, sometimes is a bit challenging for me.
I would have thought for a polyglot like you, Colin, the Spanish would be no problem.
Well, do you know what? Here's the thing. I do test myself occasionally. I think, well, I'm going to try and watch it without reading and see how much I understand.
Okay.
And about 2% of it I understand, which is good enough for me. It's good enough. That'll do.
That's all you need, clearly, to watch it. So what's been your box set diversion, David Evans, or have you just been beavering away writing stuff for Dirtfish.com?
Well, I have to say, Lisa, I haven't actually done much box setting this Christmas, but the go-to TV for me would have to be, I'm afraid to say, why am I afraid to say, I don't know, the 20 years...
Without J.K. Rowling.
Reunion of... Of Harry Potter. Yeah, exactly, without J.K. Rowling. Let's not go there.
I felt the same. I watched all that as well, David.
And I agree,
I feel the woman's been utterly unjustly a pariah.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that, George.
Well, funny enough, though, I've been listening to the audiobooks of Harry Potter again. Not again. Stephen Fry, you can get him reading the books. I forgot how much better the books are than the film. I forgot how much brilliant stuff there is in there. My box set binge has been Ted Lasso. And if nobody's watched Ted Lasso,
it's the greatest programme I've ever watched, Lisa. It's the greatest.
What's that about,
the
Lisa?
Greatest.
Well, theoretically, it's about a football manager, an American who comes over to manage a Premier League team, but it's not about that. It's just so, it makes you feel really good.
We know fabulous. A lot of positive Americans, don't we? But I have to say, I don't think any of us know Americans quite as positive as Ted Lasso. Has Nate turned bad yet?
Oh yes, I'm right the way to the end. Nate, it's not Nate the Great anymore.
But quite possibly the best program I think ever watched.
Genuinely, the best television program
I think I've ever watched. How I missed it for
Ted Lasso.
So many
put it on your list, George.
Genuinely. Generally, I think it's on. Is it on Apple TV? Or is it on? Yeah. It's not Apple. Is it Amazon or something?
I don't do Apple TV. It's the one I refuse to do.
Paying for that and having like have a one hit binge where you just watch that.
Absolutely. Get the freebie, watch it, and then unsubscribe.
It is perfect television. Yeah, yeah.
The best.
Maybe we won't put that one on there. It's absolute genius.
So, yeah, Happy New Year to everybody. But just a question I ask myself every year is when do we stop saying Happy New Year? It's very difficult, isn't it? You know, we had the painter in, Painter Pete, over the weekend. And
Pete the Paint.
I didn't even say Happy New Year to him. I don't know. It just feels as though, okay, we're only on the 10th of January, but it feels as though we've been in 2022 for a long time. It's a question. Every January, I ask myself, when do we stop? You know, if we were going to Mexico in March this year, we haven't spoken to our friends in Mexico since we left them last year, or in fact, 2 years ago. So do we say Happy New Year to all of our Mexican friends in March? I don't know. Just a question. Yeah, no, and hello to you.
I just brought it in because I haven't spoken to you guys in all this time, and I just thought, and chaps out there might not have had anybody say Happy New Year to them either. Right, I'm going to rattle through just to kind of set out the stall, which you have beautifully done with a fabulous running order, David. We are going to have a quick look back at last year with your fabulous top 10 as a point of argument, Colin. So you're going to take the lead on that. We're going to have a little look forward to 2022. What is going to be worth looking forward to this year? Anything, to be honest, the last couple of years have been such a mess. Hopefully 2022 is going to be a little bit more organised. We're going to talk about Lobinogio, hopefully. We're going to see what's happening with the testing side of things and perhaps look ahead to put some predictions in there and what we can expect from the season ahead in terms of teams. So as you've put on your thing, sounds okay? Question mark. I think that does sound okay. We didn't really wrap up last year though. Colin,
yeah.
You've done a marvellous top 10.
Well,
arguably
is the word. At least it's marvellous depending on how you look at it. I have to say it is, you know, it's a thing I've been doing for the last few years. And you know what? Any list is a subjective list, isn't it? It's all down to how you see things, how you perceive things, you know, where you put value and where perhaps you don't put value. So, you know, you ask 100 rally journalists to give you their top 10 and the chances are they'll just about all be different, if that's possible. George will tell me if that's possible or not, mathematically.
It absolutely is possible. But as you say, Colin, it is subjective.
Totally subjective. But what I have to say is, you know, yeah. Whenever I put down a ranking, whenever I write something about someone, I'm always very happy to defend what I've written. I'll never write anything just for sensationalism or to try and make a point. There's always substance behind it. And some of the abuse every year, goodness me, my top 10 gets abused. The things I was called this year, you would not believe. I was called a crackhead, a clown. I was told to retire my writing pen, called an idiot and all sorts of things. Which, you know... Nothing new then. You know, what a way to go into the new year. Do you know, I don't mind that. I really don't mind that.
Well, I mean, and the other question, the other outlying question, Colin, is how do you think Novak Djokovic is going to go in Monte Carlo?
Oh, jeez, yeah, Novak Djokovic, what a lad! We'll not talk about that. So yeah, listen, you know, as we all know, you know, lists come with an awful lot of personal input. So yeah, I think the biggest thing was when my number one pick, which surprised a few people, I had Rovan Pera down as number one pick. Now we can argue this all day long, but. But for me, it'll never happen again. We'll never get a season where a driver becomes the youngest ever winner of a round of the World Rally Championship and in the same season is the youngest ever leader of the championship. For me, those two achievements in a single year by young Rovan Pera were enough alone. It didn't matter what he did for the rest of the year. To achieve those two incredible milestones, to rewrite history in that way with those two achievements, was enough for me to say Rovan Pera, driver of the year, because it'll never, ever, chances are, happen again.
I'm not sure the nickname Finnish Freak's going to take on, though.
But not everyone agreed with that. And I get it. And I get that not everyone agreed with that. He did have a very bad spell halfway through the year, but he bounced back from it. But I don't care. Those two achievements alone for me were enough to make him my driver of the year.
I think you're right, Colin. It's impossible to ignore what Calle Rovanperä achieved last season.
So it wasn't you that called me a crackhead,
wasn't it? You know, just to see the continued rise of this guy was sensational.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm sorry that you clearly took so much abuse. I'm sorry that your children took to social media to call
mostly,
names.
Mostly, I believe, and not putting Ogier at number one. And as I said, you know, I find it very difficult not to put the world champion at number one, but that would be the easy thing to do. And Ogier has achieved so much in his career. You know, it took a very special...
You've got him at number two.
Put him at number two, yeah.
But... Was it the Calle Rovanperä at number one thing that rattled people's cages, Cole?
But David, this is the problem. You see, what you've just said is why these kind of lists create so much debate. It's not a list of the fastest driver. And if it was, you're probably right. You're probably right. Neuville would have been at the top and Tanak would have been at the top if it had been the list of the fastest drivers. But it's not. It's not. It's my view on...
You don't have to look too far to justify what Calais did.
Correct. Correct.
Or his position at Collins number one, you know.
And I might have might have been able to justify that, but I don't think so.
I was disappointed, David. I was equally disappointed. There's nothing we could call Colin out for particularly on it. I couldn't even argue with you on it, Colin. I could disagree with it, but not argue it.
For me, Colin, you know, maybe the one change that I would have made is to bring Tanak up a little bit higher. This is something that you and I talked about a fair bit through the 2021 season. I feel that Tanak was unlucky. I know we don't talk about luck in this championship, in this sport, but I think he was. I think he warranted a better overall place in the championship. You know, he was the guy that won the most stages last season. And you only have to look at his results, stuff like Safari. Okay, Spain, he made a mistake. But still, I think he was unfortunate. And maybe he's the one guy that I would have put higher up.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that entirely. He was unlucky. But I'm not sure. Again, you know, the brain thing is difficult because he only did so many rounds. But you look at the rounds he did and you look at the way he performed. And you know, you factor in the in and out of the seat, and you think, well, that's an incredible achievement. And is that a better achievement than the unlucky year that Tanak had? I'd argue strongly it is a better achievement, but I agree with you. You know, if we're going to say, well, take out Tanak's bad luck and let's just count him on the rallies where he had a good car and a clean run, Tanak was imperious. He really was. But you know, but that's not the whole story. So it is just such a difficult bloody thing to write, David. It really is. I think you've said it many times. The day you got out of having to write driver ratings was a very happy day for you.
So I don't think we need to defend Calle Rovanperä at number one. You're right, Colin. He was imperious. He was tremendous. throughout last year, there was, like you say, the odd hiccup. Croatia, but then, you know, equally he was unfortunate in Portugal, Sardinia. He had those couple of mechanical issues, and then Safari, of course, was difficult for him, getting stuck in the sand. You know, any driver probably that was first on the road was going to have those same issues. But for me, definitely, he's a number one, and he's a boy to watch.
Well, he's got to. I mean, what happened to him last year was a typical young driver thing. You know, we've seen it recently with a number of other drivers where, you know, your ascendancy all of a sudden plateaus and, you know, it gets exponentially harder each tiny little step you make as a driver. And that last little step is hard to make. And the guy seemed to make it, but you've then got to sustain it over a number of events. And, you know, he's missing experience on some. That's a new arena for him with working right up there at the top edge of the sport. Although he seems to do it with, you know, in his to coin a term you use for Ogier and also for Tanak, you know, imperious a couple of times this year, but he didn't manage to maintain it. And then right at the end of the year, of course, he was playing that team game, so he never got to show anything in Monza particularly, but. Yeah, interesting guy. So now he's going to come back this year and do the job. And I tell you what, you'd be hard-pressed to argue that the guy's not going to be the one to follow. Is, honestly speaking, Elfyn's experience now enough to actually carry him through in that stable bubble that keeps him always sitting there in the top two or three drivers through all the events, which is what you need to win the championship. You can't have those dips down.
It's that thing, though, isn't it, George, that, you know, always Sébastien Ogier talked about Calle Rovanperä's experience. He said, you know, don't look at the last 2 years as a factory driver for Rovanperä. Look back 10 years when this guy was in and out of a car and driving at good speed every single day of his life. He has great experience of driving a rally car. I can see the point that is he going into the season on an equal footing with Elfyn? I don't know. Potentially, yes, because we have these new regulations. Nobody has experience of these Rally 1 cars. But at the same time, Elfyn does have that more sort of global experience, doesn't he? He knows how to manage a rally. He knows how to manage a season. He's finished second to Sébastien Ogier for the last 2 years. That de facto, he is the second best in the world. The first best in the world has gone now. So let's see.
Well, you're absolutely right, David. But he did slip, and I would just put that down to his part of the growth, and you know, my goodness me, Safari in particular, what a miserable experience. But you know, that's just going to make the guy stronger. If I was the other drivers, I'd think, oh my God, he's had all those dreadful things happen to him now already. You know, in 1 year, he's been leading the championship, youngest driver ever to win an event, blah, 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 blah. And then he has all these dreadful events at the same time, including having to follow probably quite a tough team order at the end of the year. God, that's going to make him strong this year.
George,
what a
George,
threat he's going to be. He's going to come back charged.
Yeah, and do you know what? That last event of the year, it's the last hurrah, isn't it, for the season. He's got nothing to lose. Throw everything at the wind. No, you're not. You're not. You're going to bring this car home. How well did he take that? You know, he was quickest in shakedown. And then supposedly he was told the instructions after shakedown, wasn't he? How well did he take it? He drove the event with a smile on his face, with a really great attitude. And not every driver would have reacted in that way, that's for sure. Not every driver would have, you know, seen, I suppose, the positives in it and maybe tried to take something out of it. But Robin Perra did, and I think that was a sign of him.
Look at the confidence he showed, Colin, you know. And George, you've been in charge of drivers. What kind of a driver is it that goes into at the end of his second full year in a factory car, goes and does two donuts in the last stage? You know, how incredible was that? That demonstrates the confidence that the guy has got. And how relaxed he is with the team, and how relaxed he is with the environment.
Seriously, yeah. I mean, you know, the first one is, you know, for Christ's sakes, just don't get cocky, honestly. Honestly, do you really think it's that easy? Do you really think it's that easy? Because there's a lot of drivers find out it's not.
So listen, if David, you've got 10 euros to spend on who's going to win the championship this year. What are the odds we're going to get on Robin Perra winning? I think they're going to be quite low odds, sadly. I don't think you're going to get great value. What do you think?
Cole, we've talked about this, the whole bookmakers setting the odds thing before. You know, I'm not very good at assessing what long and short odds are, but
it'd be good to see the odds.
Ultimately, a bookmaker would perhaps look at a piece of paper and say, okay, here's a guy who's got 2 years experience. You know, let's give him quite long odds. But actually, they should be short because he has the speed, he has the ability, he doesn't quite have the experience, but they're on a level playing field of a Rally 1, of using Rally 1 cars. So the odds, you know, he would you put 10 euros on Calle Robin Perra? Probably, yes, you would, because I think, you know, it's a fairly safe-ish bet. But like you say, the odds aren't going to be great. You know, your money would be better perhaps on a Craig Breen or somebody like that with slightly longer odds. That's not to decry what Breeny's going to do. Or maybe you go completely left field and put your money on Adrian Formo.
Is Elvin now old?
No, he's not, Lise, is he? He's not old. We're old.
Absolutely. And I mean, add to that, we don't really know how any of the cars are going to go. I mean, is Ford going to come out the box amazingly quickly? Have they grasped everything better than everyone else, having had tested longer? Or is it going to be Toyota or Hyundai?
That's the point, isn't it? We have got no idea. Absolutely. Nobody really knows what's coming. We've done all the testing. We've seen the cars in the Alps. We've seen the cars doing what they're doing. But you put some numbers on the side of these things and everything changes. And it is such a massive step in terms of the technical regulation that nobody can predict what we've got coming later this month in Monte Carlo.
It's interesting with Elfin, because I still see him in the ascendancy, really. I mean, he's there, but I mean, he's still giving extra. And he has the odd little slip down where he now has the maturity to just say, I'm not getting this, okay. You know, like in Spain last year, he thought he was going to do it, but then he got eaten away. He didn't lose his cool. Good championship drive, really, to all intents and purposes. And that was a great deal of maturity. And that's where we're still seeing Elfin. Already he's got a good amount of collateral in there. I think accepting Ogier, I think, as good as anyone in the championship in terms of that management aspect. But he's still producing this incredible speed, little steps, you know.
Look what he did in Finland.
Yeah. What was that about? Fantastic.
Finland was phenomenal. Again, if we go back to my driver ratings, what I said about Elfin was that he kind of consolidated the 2020 gains that he made in 2021. He didn't actually make too many steps forward, but sometimes that's not a bad thing, you know, to consolidate it where you have that ability, as you say, George, to manage the event. Your safe pace is a pace that's always going to get you a top four, top five finish, probably a top three finish. You know, he consolidated that. He showed that that is there and it's genuine. But he does have to make, I think, a little step forward, because I think this year will be so much more competitive. I think we've got 6-7 drivers that can win again this year.
You're absolutely right, Colin. Sorry for interrupting, but the added element of the unknown of the reliability of these new cars. Mm. Now, granted, I don't think that this new hybrid system that the WRC cars have there's nothing earth-shaking about it. It's a very simple system. It's almost identical in its power and capacity to the systems fitted by Volkswagen to their Golfs and Audi e-trons. I don't know how much of it's based on that, but it's very coincidental that it's very similar in terms of capacity, the rate it charges at, and the power it delivers. Obviously, the way it delivers it and the mechanism of delivering it is entirely different. But it's there's an incredible dynamic in there. And that will favour the guy that has the technical nous, the ability to figure it out, the team. It's an incredible additional dynamic we're seeing just at the start of this year. It may just come to nothing. You know, it may be everyone sorts out quite quickly, and I'm sure they will, because we're talking about very professional teams, three very professional teams there that are going to figure this out. But what an interesting extra dynamic Monte Carlo is going to be.
I know we're going to move on to it, but Colin, in your top 10, you do have Monsieur Ogier at number two. We also wanted to talk about the return, the place of Sebastian Loeb and Ogier in the championship. I don't know if we want to move on from the top 10 onto that.
It's a pretty good way to do it, Lise. And, you know, my primary question here is, you know, where is their place in the sport now? Should they be coming back? Are they now taking the seat of a promising young junior driver who could really benefit from the experience of doing Monte Carlo in one of these cars? Or should we rejoice in the fact that we're going to get another Loeb-Ogier battle in the French Alps? Discuss.
Yeah, listen, David, they're not paying for themselves to come back. You know, they're not saying I'm going to spend...
No, absolutely not. They're not cold.
There's a very good reason for them coming back. You know, in Loeb's case, Red Bull want him back. And I have no question, no doubt, that M Sport will benefit from his vast experience. In Ogier's case, he's still on top of his game. So, you know, I don't buy all this, you know, blocking seats for young drivers. You know, if Ogier wasn't in that car, sorry, if Loeb wasn't in that car in Monte Carlo, no one would be. No one would be. And the thing with that is if Loeb wasn't in that car in Monte Carlo, there would be a very big question mark over Formeau being in his car. Because as I understand it, you know, the Red Bull thing is kind of interlinked. I might not be entirely correct with that, but I think that's a reasonable summation of the situation there. I if these guys want to come back at any point, it's the great thing about our sport. You know, they're able to. They're able to, whether it be a commercial deal, whether it be a deal where a manufacturer needs a little bit of help, perhaps on a particular rally or with a car developing, or whether it be a driver just finding his own backing or his own budget and just going out to have one last blast, as we saw with Gronholm a few years ago, then magic. We should just celebrate the fact that we're able to enjoy these drivers once more and watch the battle, wherever it might be in the field. I suspect, sadly, that Loeb will not be troubling the top of the timesheets. Ogier probably will be, but I don't think Loeb will be, sadly. But we'll watch it. We'll watch it and we'll enjoy it and we'll reminisce about wonderful times and wonderful battles and incredible performances, particularly from Loeb in, I think it was 2012, when that first stage where he took 25 seconds out of everyone. Mm. We will enjoy it and we will celebrate the fact that they're on the stages. I don't get the detractors for this one, I'm afraid.
Yeah, no, I'm with you, Cole, 100%, and I think your analysis of the situation is bang on there. Without Loeb, we wouldn't have had a fourth Puma out there. So we've got to enjoy it. And you know, we're about stories, and already, you know, the rumor, the speculation, was he coming back? Wasn't he coming back? Then the first test, then the second test. It was great. You know, it gives us something to write about. And he clearly, you know, you only have to look at what he's doing in Dakar as we speak. unless in the last half hour or so he's gone off or broken it or something. he's doing a tremendous job. And we continually talk about this. You know, I had long discussions last week with people in the team and everybody. What can we expect from Lowe? Everybody's opinion is pretty similar to yours, Cole. But let's not forget, it's Monte Carlo. Admittedly, we're much further south in Monte. And the one thing that I did say in my email to everybody is, let's not make this into a Monte preview. So I'll be very brief here. But it's still Monte Carlo. Anything can happen. He can win that rally.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, he can win that rally on experience and on understanding how to get the best out of a tyre package and everything. The very fact that we're talking about Sebastian Loeb going back to Monte Carlo makes it worthwhile. Mm. It's a great story.
Yeah, you know.
And it may draw a different audience back again as well, that maybe have lapsed a little.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, he was... last world champion. I mean, this is quite remarkable to think this, but 10 years ago
Crikey.
Was his last world championship. You know, don't we all feel even older now?
Yep. Thanks for that.
It's sorry.
Especially as we all remember his first championship.
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward at the Monte Carlo weather, and it's 2 weeks, two week outlook, so very, very approximate, but it's looking gorgeously sunny and dry for the next 2 weeks.
God,
that's a blow.
How dull.
Hey, look, actually, you say that. Okay, a snowy Monte Carlo is interesting from the story, but a dry Monte Carlo
is a representation
so fabulously
of
fast. It's so fast and great to watch. Mm. You watch a snowy Monte Carlo, you're watching cars going past you at 10 km/h on the snowy sections because they're on slicks. Nobody's ever on the right tyres these days. They're all in a compromise. So we're going to see at least a proper clean rally. I prefer a dry Monte Carlo in many ways. I love the drama of the wet, but...
And it does. It would give, if it was a bone dry Monte, you know, there is an obvious tyre choice, and that is obviously the soft Pirelli, that which is the harder of the two tarmac tyres, because they have the soft and the super soft. If every car is on the super soft, it does give you a real... insight into where the speed is for the season, doesn't it, George?
Yeah, it is. But that said, I mean, it is showing, you know, clear, dry, relatively sunny weather. I mean, like, they're suggesting 7 hours of sunshine a day, basically, throughout. I mean, basically, obviously, the computer model's saying nothing at the moment. But you're still going to get, it's going to be freezing overnight. Yeah. It will be. So you've got water that... it freezes on the ground, then the running water comes out over the road. So you're still going to get icy patches and things. It's still going to be exciting.
But generally speaking,
it's going to be clean and fast.
Definitely bordering and verging into Monte preview territory here.
Sorry, I've stopped. It was just in relation to that.
I think we're all agreed, though, that absolutely 100% Ogier and Loeb. Great story. It'll be great to see them both competing in Monte. And it may well be the only time that we see them head-to-head this year. If Loeb comes back and does a few more, will he come back and do the same events that that Ogier is doing?
Sure.
Who knows?
I'm sure it'll just be down to A, enjoyment, B, performance. If he's up there, the very nature of him, look, he's out there doing a Dakar, his thirst for competition has not changed.
I think it's motivation as well, George.
Appreciates the challenge, appreciates the challenge, enjoys the events. Yeah. If everything goes well, I think he'll get motivated
and he'll do really well.
It's
a fair contest to build up this head-to-head Ogier against Loeb. Nor do I. You know, we're talking about drivers from...
It's not going to stop us,
Cole. No, but I was just putting a bit of reason into it. You know, Loeb's from a different generation. He's from a different decade. You know, Ogier is a man just coming off the back of his wonderful success. It's not a fair fight to put the two against each other. You know, every single day of the week, you would put Ogier down as the winner in a straight head to head at this time in their careers.
But
you'd have to.
Mm. Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong, Colin and David. But Ogier's comments at the end of last year, you know, what was he saying? Well, maybe I've decided to retire a little bit too quickly.
Yeah.
That came after on the back of his WEC test, where I read a comment from the team manager saying, "Well, yeah, he's quite good, but we're not going to put him in a car yet."
I don't know. I got the impression.
I mean, that's what I read. I mean, maybe they're going to put him in a third car or a customer car or something, but he certainly wasn't going to be taken by Toyota straight into the top rung, which I kind of expected him to be. Maybe he expected it as well. And then after that, we saw these comments, oh, maybe I've made the decision a bit early. Maybe I should do a little bit more next year. But I mean, he has commented on the fact that, you know, he'll decide what he's doing as he goes through the year. A little bit hard on the team.
But who would turn him down, George? Who would turn him down?
I mean, he's got that luxury. Exactly. Well, as I said, he's got that luxury and he's earned that luxury
that
as well.
I got that impression after the interview we did with him after Monza that, I didn't factor in at all the Monza comment, not the Monza, the WEC comments. But I definitely got the impression that he was taking a different approach this year, really to consider his options. And he had not in any way discounted the option of a full-time return to rallying. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how he gets on with this new hybrid car and where he thinks you know, his future is. Because if he does come back, what's he got? Another year or two, perhaps, at the top? I don't know.
Well, he's 38, isn't he? And he's just 38 last year. You know, I mean, Carlos and people like that were still going at 43. If he takes a year, 2 years out, he's still got a year to 2 years to come back and be at a good speed.
We're still talking. Listen,
moving us on.
Sorry, Lise.
I was just going to move us forward a bit just because the clock always tries to beat us. And we, as always, are taking on the clock. Well, Colin, what are you looking forward to most in 2022? We've got so many changes coming through. We've got fabulous Craig Breen's got a full year in the WRC. We've got Rally Japan's back on the schedule.
So
I mean, there's so much excitement promised.
It's difficult. It's really difficult. And I'd throw in there as well a new regime at the FIA, you know, with your president, Ben Sulayem, taking over. Mm. It'll be interesting to see what he does with rallying. You know, for me, that's exciting. And I think he's under no disillusion as to how big a job he's got with the WRC. And I think it'll be very, very interesting to see what he does this year. But yeah, this new hybrid, this is the most exciting thing we've had in years, isn't it? You know, how is it going to work? Is it going to work?
What's the testing situation, Colin? What's the testing situation? I mean, a bit of an update on the testing over this period.
You know, the testing all looks
what's
quite
the
good.
Coming
it
back
all,
from
it
that?
All looks pretty good.
Shall we just have a quick look ahead to 22 and then we'll come on to the testing?
It's on the list. You've mentioned
lots
of really exciting things there. And I don't think I could actually say there's one particular thing that I'm looking forward to more than another. There is so much. And the Breen situation is one. We've all been big fans of Craig's for 10 or so years now, 12 years now. And this is his first full season in the WRC. What is he capable of? Well, we're going to find out this year. There's an awful lot to look forward to. I think it's going to be one of the most exciting years. We're going to get potentially a new champion. Okay, there's every chance that Tanak could make it two championships this year, but there's every chance as well that we're going to get a brand new champion this year, and that's exciting to look forward to. There's just so much. It's such an enormous year ahead of us.
David's looking forward to nice climate so he can carry on with the sweaters and the cords.
Absolutely. And like Cole said there, it is the absolute mass uncertainty. You know, as George will doubtless tell us, you know, teams and team principals, sporting directors all want to manage out any kind of unpredictability from the season. That's the last thing they want. They want to understand everything. You know, when you go to stage one in Monte, George, you would want to know exactly where that ice starts coming so that you can make exactly the right tire choice.
Oh, yeah.
Forget all of that. It's all gone. You know, nobody has a clue what's coming later this month in Monte and for the rest of the year. You know, it's all very well talking about the first round, but there's a whole development process to go through this year with these cars. You know, we haven't stopped now. You know, they've had to stop because they've had to start building cars for round one. But once we get from there, you know, we have a 3 week gap or something before we've got round two. And then we've got an even bigger gap through March where the teams will be working flat out to iron out any teething issues or get rid of any teething issues and to make the cars quicker. Sebastian Ogier put it exactly right at the end of Monza Rally last month when he said, look at the speed. You know, in 17, when we had these cars in Monte Carlo, they were quick. By the time we'd finished them with them 5 years later, they were sensationally quick. okay, we've only got a 3-year homologation cycle with these Rally 1 cars, but guaranteed they will get more reliable and faster and faster and faster through the coming 3 years. So that's it. You know, everything that you said, Cole, you know, Mohammed bin Salim, great, great chance for change with Robert Reed at his side. Mm-hmm. And we have to see change. You know, this sport has stagnated for too long. You know, it frustrates the hell out of me that our first discussion with John Todd 11 years ago, whenever it was, 12, obviously 12 years ago. Yes, banging a desk. Endurance is what rallying should be about. We need change in rallying. We got nothing. You know, okay, we got some great, great rally cars. We got the return of Safari. But fundamentally, the sport hasn't really moved on. And we have to have that movement now from Ben Sulayman. Listening to him, listening to Robert Reed, they have such great plans and great intentions. It's going to be a very, very exciting season. And we're going back to New Zealand. And that gives us a chance to talk about rugby 24/7. And we're going back to Japan.
You might even be able to talk a little bit about sailing, David, if you really want to.
Woo! Oh, lovely, yeah.
I forgot about that. Yeah, so absolutely, Cole.
Let's talk about testing then. Yep. As George was mentioning there, what do we know heading?
We haven't asked George.
Sorry, George.
Have we? Outrageous.
Well, I'm looking forward to understanding exactly how the hybrid system's going to work. I mean, I've learned a little bit more in the last week, of course, having read Dirtfish and got Tom Fowler's comments and Richard Milner's insights via Luke's comments in the Dirtfish website. Brilliant. But it's quite interesting to keep talking about, you know, the regenerative effect under braking. It's that in my
because
experience,
you've got an electric
tiny,
car, George, haven't you?
You don't get a lot back. I have, yeah. Well, it's a plug-in hybrid, but it recharges in the same way as these. And in terms of the power, it's very similar. It's I think my car's got 100 kilowatt. No, it's not quite 100. I think it's maybe 100 kilowatt. Does it have 100 kilowatt, or certainly 100 horsepower electric motor in my car? And it's got about a 9 kilowatt hour battery. And it can charge, I mean, when you put it onto the charge mode, it charges it gives you an extra mile for every mile and a half you drive when you're driving it on recharge. Which is not something that you would ever do except to see what it does, which is what I've done.
Can you explain that to me? Sorry, I'm being a bit dim. So is that a bit like in the...
Compulsorily.
When I was a kid, we used to get the most exciting thing about... I mean, I loved playing on my bike when I was a kid because I lived out in the middle of nowhere, so I could ride everywhere. Very exciting when I got dynamos and this whole concept of generating my own electricity to power the lights.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm kind of wondering, is that kind of technology then basically you're using... Yep. Motion to create more battery charging, or
Well, it's a little bit.
I'm guessing slightly more complicated.
A little bit more complex, and not just as straightforward. It's not as straightforward as that. But basically, when you press the brakes, it basically turns the electric motor that drives the engine into a dynamo. At least I'm assuming that's what this one does. I've not actually seen a complete breakdown of it, but it won't have it basically will generate a huge amount of power. It'll be very, 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 very efficient, but it's for such short bursts. I mean, how long is a rally driver on the brakes for? A second and a half? 2 seconds?
But George?
Yeah?
George, can I ask a question there? So is that you when you press the brakes? Is it the resistance to the the engine braking because they don't? It's
no,
not physical braking.
You press the brakes and up to a certain effort on the brakes is taken by the hybrid system, absorbs that power and converts it into electricity. And it's pretty well seamless. You know, a good mapping is seamless, and then you can feel and even hear the brakes starting to work on my car. I lift off. Press the brakes a little bit more. The car slows down a little bit more, and then you can hear it more than you can feel it. The brakes start to work.
Josh, just explain this to me then. When David and I were very fortunate, we went to see the Audi. This incredible Audi that's competing at Dakar just now. And Matthias Ekstrom was explaining to us about the braking and the regeneration. And he said, it's incredible because we use no brake pads. We hardly use any brake pads on it. Because is it the engine that does the braking? It's the dynamo?
Well, that's an all-electric car. And obviously not vastly all-electric. Powerful.
But is it a hybrid? Sort of regen, isn't it, Cole?
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
Does the engine drive the electric motor, or does the engine also drive the wheels?
It's the electric motor that drives the wheels, and it's essentially got a generator in the back.
So it's a huge
generating.
It's got a generator in the back to keep topping it off. So yes, so basically, it can be incredibly powerful. You know, it can stop the car very quickly. And hardly ever use the brakes. I mean, I probably could just about damn well use that one set of pads all the way through the event. The more powerful.
But
it
your
is.
Question, Kel, is how does that happen?
Yeah, I'm still a little bit lost.
What makes the car slow down?
Well, it's just like imagine you don't get anything for nothing. So Lisa's dynamo on her bicycle wheel that gave her lights. At night or in the evening or whenever
required
she wanted
resistance.
To use them.
Anytime I wanted to pedal extra hard.
It costs you extra power. It costs you power to drive that. And if it's on or off, if you were freewheeling, if you pedaled up to 20 miles an hour, however fast you could go and stop pedaling, you'll go so far and the bike will stop. If you've got the dynamo on the bike, it'll stop a lot quicker because it's taking power. The more power you take, the more braking you get. The more direct that contact is, the more you've got connection effectively. In the case of these electric cars, it's everything. It's the crank delivering the power. It's everything. So it basically, you know, it's the same. It's just the same as you've got a hydroelectric power station, Colin. You know, the water's going through the turbines. It's being slowed by the turbines because it has to speed the turbines up. It's a braking effect effectively. The more load you put on that turbine, the slower it'll go. But the whole point is it's geared to a constant speed, very, very, very carefully, and that's done by water input and balanced against
Spin
the power
the rally
demand.
Pod, not just rally cars. We do physics too.
A fairly dynamic relationship between the controls on those things. It's not straightforward at all.
I think I need to do a bit more homework.
I'm right with you, George. I think that's. Yeah. I was going to say, I'm looking forward to the explainer that's going to be on dirtfish.com and hopefully they'll level it at idiot level so that I'll understand it completely. But I'm very much looking forward to this new technology as well, George, because here in the UK, our government's decided that petrol cars need to get binned by 2030. I'm not entirely sure how that's going to work, but it's this transition that rallying has, led the way for the development of road cars for plebs like me. And I'm genuinely excited about the fact that rallying might be taking the lead again to, you know, make road driving exciting again.
Well, it might not be a technical lead, Lisa, but it's actually what it is actually showing us. So if the FIA's intentions were to get, you know, to move us into the next phase of what motoring will be, the reality is, you know, rally is very like a normal person uses a car in that they drive around and go places and then come back where they can recharge, whatever. Unlike racing, which is, you know, you've got e-racing, which is tailored around the end product. So the reality is that you can't actually rally an electric car because it's not going to work in exactly the same way that if everybody goes electric, then you know, you can book your car and you may be allowed to charge it once a month under the current regime. In the US, in California, they're already having massive problems. And there's a fraction of the cars are electric. They're having massive problems where they're actually having to limit people from charging the cars.
George, I'm going to give you a thought on this. I've already mentioned that President Ben Salim
has got
a big job to do. He's got a really big job to do, but he understands this. We, you know, for many, many years, rallying was the natural test and proving ground for cars, and it should have been, and it was underutilized and undersold. And what happened?
Yeah.
A little competitor sneaked in. They sneaked in and they said, there's an opportunity there. We'll cater to what the manufacturers want. We will become the test and proving ground for road cars. What is it? It's the Dakar. So we are now behind the game. We are behind the game. You know, Audi have spent, David, I hate to think of their budget, but it's got to be many tens of millions. on this, this Sardar project. Yeah. Tens, if not close to hundreds of millions. You know, we have missed an opportunity. And not only that, we've given someone else that opportunity. We've handed it to them. Said, there you go. You can run with this one. You know, for me, Audi have got a very interesting concept here. What they've got is they've got a hybrid with its own power generating unit. Its own power generating unit. Now, it doesn't work just now, but can you imagine a future not too far down the line where you have an ultra efficient ICE engine that has biofuel, that uses biofuel that powers the car itself? So you are going to have an ICE engine, but it's a biofuel, so it's sustainable. And it's manageable. There is, George is right, it is inconceivable that in 10 years' time, every car on the roads will have their own charging points and have enough electricity to charge them. Audi understands that. So what are they doing? They're looking at alternatives and saying, actually, that's not a sustainable future because we just can't get there. You know, now, these kind of things, rallying should have been offering up to the manufacturers. And we've not, because we got complacent. We had someone in charge who just didn't see the point. You know, and they went with this 25-year-old technology as the next step. We've got a huge job to do to catch up.
I think that it's easy to say that they didn't see the point, Carl. I think they, of course, they saw the point. You know, you'd have to be terribly silly not to see the point. But it was just such a big leap, wasn't it? You know, to say, and we all stood there 5 years ago and said, oh, you couldn't possibly have an all-electric rally car. Imagine that. How could you send a car off to? And look at what Audi are doing. And like you say, you know, they had the vision and they went about it and did it. And they're reaping the rewards.
But not just that, David. Not just that. The Dakar organisers also had the balls to turn around and say, we're going to accommodate these people. We're not going to turn them away and say, oh, don't be silly. You can't come and play in our event. We are going to find a way of accommodating them. Now, for me, President Ben Salim has said it's a blank sheet of paper. It has to be a completely blank sheet of paper. And we need to work out regulations that accommodate what the manufacturers want. And if we're too rigid with those regulations, we're stuffed. Telling manufacturers the only way into rallying is with a hybrid engine, which does nothing. What is the point in a hybrid? Hybrid is to, I think, is to save energy. It's to save fuel. It's to save fossil fuels. How many kilometres of hybrid use have we got in the Monte Carlo rally?
No.
3.3 kilometres. 3.3 kilometres of
fuel. But I think you'll find it's 3.6 actually, Cole, which is actually 2.27 miles. But we're getting into Monte. We're not actually. Sorry. No, we're not. We're not. But I've written a piece actually saying, Cole, that is exactly the right number. And in some ways, it's almost too many kilometers, miles. Because what we need right now are cars that get through, are cars that work for the first round.
So what's
the point in putting a whole bunch of quiet zones on the route going through, I don't know, Peugeot Tenier or these villages and towns? Don't do it. Because if the cars break down, if the cars fail those quiet zones, then we've got to ask the stewards to find a way of penalising them. Let's just make it as straightforward as we can. Now, I'm not vindicating the fact that we're in this position, because we shouldn't be in this position. You know, we should have had enough time, enough lead time to have these cars fully developed and not absolutely reliable, but sufficiently reliable that they could do the job that they were set out to do. They could do, say, I don't know, 20 kilometres of quiet zone. We're not in that position. Let's not make ourselves look very silly.
Agree with you. As always, David, you're the voice of reason.
But you're dead right, Cole. You know, you are absolutely right. There's not enough, but we are where we are. So instead of, sometimes we have a great ability to shoot ourselves in the foot in this championship. Let's not do that. And I think we have to applaud the organisers of Monte. You know, they, on one hand, they've given us the ability to keep cars in the event. And on the other hand, they've taken it away by not giving us a lunchtime service on Friday and Saturday. I can totally see your point. And you're right. You know, the organisers of Dakar embraced it and we didn't. We buried our heads in the sand and pretended to tell ourselves that hybrid would be enough. When hybrid, you know, Toyota's been running hybrid Hiluxes for probably knocking on the door 30 years. Yeah. Well, yeah, 24
years. 1989.
Yeah. How's that modern technology?
God, I didn't know that.
Yeah. 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 Mm. Yeah. And apparently, according to something I read the other day, a hybrid, you're the very first hybrid. This can't be right. Someone's going to tell me this is completely wrong. Ferdinand Porsche invented the first hybrid. Apparently,
wow!
Many.
I would almost be surprised. In one way, of course, Porsche were quite bleeding edge at various points. But you know, electric cars came before petrol cars. There was a lot of electric cars around in the late 1800s. They weren't very brilliant, but and they had, you know, obviously massive heavy lead acid type batteries, and they were basically just, you know, horse carriages with little electric motors on them, or probably quite big ones in reality. But when the internal combustion came along, I would be very surprised if somebody hadn't made a hybrid back then. There was a lot of ingenuity around in the early 1900s regarding this. But the battery, the bulk of the battery at that time, of course, was really, really a limiting factor. Not least of all the old milk floats that we used to see going around in UK up until about the 1980s. Milk floats were all electric. Milk was delivered to everyone's house. You didn't buy milk at the supermarket. Milk was delivered to your house pretty well everywhere. It was delivered by an electric cart.
Do you remember when Milk George, particularly in Dundee, when it was delivered in wintertime and it would freeze between the milkman putting it on your doorstep in the bottle and you opening the front door and you had like 3 inches of milk, frozen milk protruding from the top of the bottle. Do you remember that?
It was cream. And I do remember seeing that,
And it became an instant ice lolly.
And the birds would peck through the top, wouldn't they?
And the birds would be down stealing it.
I was going to say, we're running out of time here, so I think we're going to have to keep testing for our next podcast. So we'll be looking ahead to Monte Carlo relatively soon, so perhaps we'll cover testing. And I want those predictions, and I want your 2022 predictions. And you guys listening at Dirtfish Rally is the best way to get in touch on Twitter. And then we can, crack on with this season.
And don't forget, but big point, we don't make New Year's resolutions here, but we have made one New Year's resolution to make a podcast every single week, every Tuesday. You will be able to download Spin the Rally Pod. We'll be recording every Monday, if not before. Stop laughing. It will happen.
At 7 a.m. every Monday, David Evans.
Yeah, start the week with, or...
Might have to be earlier.
Yeah, God, no. No, definitely not earlier. But yeah, we'll be here every week. So subscribe, however you subscribe to your podcast, however you consume them. But yeah, we'll be here with you every week. Looking forward to it.
Just for you, David, Happy New Year.
Oh, thanks, Lise.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year, guys.
Take care.
Talk soon.